Hey, this is Aaron Carnes. We started this podcast in 2021 to promote my book, In Defense of Ska. Since then, the podcast has grown into its own thing. I've been working on an expanded second edition. I interviewed new people, edited every chapter, and there's a new final chapter, 30,000 new words. The expanded second edition of In Defense of Ska will be released on October 29th, 2024. Can you do something for me? Pre-order it right now at clashbooks.com under the Books tab. The more copies it sells in advance, the more it'll get people to support ska music. Thanks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Though ska originated in Jamaica in the late 50s, it was two-tone ska that lit the fuse all over the world. Bands in many countries heard what these two-tone ska bands were doing and wanted to bring the music to their country. This is true in the U.S., and it's true all over South America. Today we discuss the very first Venezuelan ska band, Desorden Público, who started in the mid-80s in Caracas and remained Venezuela's biggest ska band. Lead singer Horacio Blanco walks us through the band's incredible story, and we discuss how Venezuela's political climate impacted each stage of the group's career, including this present moment.
I'm really excited for everybody to hear this conversation. I didn't really know anything about Desorden Público before this. The whole story, I think, is captivating.
Yeah, definitely. I love that, I think we've talked about before how ska's big in Mexico and Latin America, but that's kind of a general statement. If like you zoom into each of these individual countries, they have their own story. And for Desorden Público, it's a story of Venezuela and how that band came to be and their relationship to that country and the history of the country is super interesting.
Also, shout out to Mari from Los Ocupados for sitting in on the conversation and helping us with a few bits of translation.
Yeah.
Overall, I mean, Horacio's English is really good.
Yeah, there wasn't very much translation needed, but it was great that she was there. And now she's the official In Defense of Ska Spanish to English translator.
Hope you're up for it, Mari.
Before we begin the conversation, I just want to introduce Mari Wendler, she's here in the interview with us. If we need a translator at any point, Mari plays in the band Los Ocupados in Olympia, Washington. Do you want to say hi, Mari?
Hi. I'm very happy to be here.
All right, thank you. So, Horacio, Desorden Público, your band, begins in Venezuela in 1985. Tell me a little bit about how you discovered ska music.
Sure. Well, in the early 80s, I was a boy, a teenager, and one of my friends, he said, "You have to come to my house. I received a cassette with a new music I can't understand, and you will love it." So I went to his place, and he had this first specials album recorded in a cassette. But the recording was awful. It was terrible. The sound was like re-recorded many times. So there was this big noise with the music, like shh. But when I listened to that music, when I listened to a message to you, Rudy, I couldn't believe my ears. I said, "Wow, what's this? What kind of music is this?" I can feel the power of I don't know, of punk music. Listen to other songs of that album, but there is also kind of a Caribbean thing happening. What's that? And my friend said, this is called ska. I said, I need more of this.
Yeah.
I need to find more of this. So we started to search for this recordings. It was not easy. There were no Spotify in those years. It was hard to find music. And living in Venezuela, it was harder because that music was not popular at all. So we had to ask friends that had the chance to travel somewhere to Europe or to the US. And then we had the chance to get that album in our hands. So that was the second shock. First, it was the music, then the image, the graphics, the photos of those guys. It was so appealing, so attractive to us as teenagers. That was like a model to follow. What was beautiful was like the best I never saw in my life. So we wanted to be Venezuelan Root Boys. And we wanted to be like the Specials. I was 14 years old. So I grabbed an old suit of my dad, and we started to dress like Root Boys, like the Specials. And we were listening to that, and we were the first Root Boys in this country. And of course, after that, we started to search for more, and we discovered the Two Tone, and we discovered other bands. You can name them: the Selector, Madness, Bad Manners. Was like the best. Ska was just the best, and we had the idea to promote ska between our friends. So we created something that we called in those days a mini teca. What is a mini teca? It was kind of a sound system that we could travel with, like, you know, speakers and kind of a power amplifier for the records we were playing. And this mobile discotheque, we used this for promoting, as I said before, promoting ska and also some punk music, the music we loved. So ska started to be a very small but passionate movement in Caracas, my hometown. This mini teca, this mobile discotheque, were hired for playing music in the underground scene where other bands, punk bands, were playing. So we were the DJs and other guys were the musicians. And when we were, you know, like playing albums from other bands, and we were also watching the bands playing their stuff, their original songs, we say, hey, it could be fun to create a band and play this music that nobody is playing here. And the bass player, well, he was not any bass player before, but he said, a friend of mine said, okay, I want to be the bass player, so I will buy an electric bass. And I said, okay, I want to be the guitar. And some other friends say, I want to be the drummer. That was the very beginning of my band. So we bought this secondhand, terrible, cheap instruments. And we say, okay, so if we have the instruments, let's play. We were to a garage, and we played the first two or three, four songs, all of them original songs. And we created the first ska band in our country. So that was 1985, some 37 years ago.
Tell me a little bit about the your band is called Desorden Público. Can you say what that means and the story behind that band name?
Well, we were into this alternative musical, cultural, or counter-cultural movement. And there were many punk influences in our attitudes, in our political positions in front of the world and the country we were living in. So there were these police trucks, these police stations that were called Orden Público. That translates like public order. And there were very repressive police institutions, very, very repressive. So the bass player of my band, he has always been a punk. He said, okay, let's be the opposite of those motherfuckers.
Yeah.
let's be the Desorden Público, which translates disorder or public disorder. So that is the reason we choose that name. And well, ever since we have been called like that, that's our historical name. And it's funny because we have played in, by the years, we have played so many different things. And we have played, I don't know, maybe with a symphonic orchestra. And it's funny to listen to, okay, now the symphonic orchestra plays music from Public Disorder. What the hell? Fun, but that has been our story. And well, that's where the name comes from.
In the early days, did you guys have run-ins with the police?
Yeah, of course. We were teenagers, drinking beers, having fun, walking in the streets by late nights, dressed like, you know, for the police eyes, we were like clowns, dressed like old men, being teenagers, dressed like our grandparents, and with poor pike hats and all that stuff, and always the police were, what the hell? What's this? Watching on us. So they always were, okay, stop there. Are you taking drugs? Show us your IDs. And as I said before, they were very repressive. So more than once, we spent a night into jail just because we were like us, with no other reason. So of course, there were enough justificaciones, Marisabel?
Justification, yeah, like excuses.
Okay, enough excuses for us to sing against this police state, may I say?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, police state.
When you start the band and you are promoting ska music in Caracas, does it become popular quickly, or does it take a while to become popular in Caracas?
Okay, I will tell you the truth. The songs were popular for our good luck. the audiences started to enjoy the themes we were singing about, and this funny music. Sky is always for dance, so people were having fun. But it was hard for us to let the crowds understand we were playing ska music. For many people, that was like the Desorden's music, the music for this band. And we said, no, we're playing a genre, and it's called ska music. Believe it or not, we were interviewed many times, and I cannot forget. Once a journalist say, okay, so what's this music you guys are playing? And we said, with Proud, we're playing ska music. And then the next day, we saw the press note, and the guys misspelled the word, and he said, okay, we have a new band playing Kass music, like A-A-S, right? And we said, what the hell, what's this? And we were like evangelizers, may I say? Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, mm-hmm. Evangelizers of this genre. So we could not let this pass. So we wrote a song for our first album. I'm talking about the late 80s. It was 1988.
Yeah, 1988.
And we recorded the first album in that year, and we created a song called Esto es Ska. This is Ska. So in that was a kind of a desperate solution for this confusion all over. So we said the lyrics of that song says, esto es ska, esto es ska. Si no te gusta, te vas.
Yeah, if you don't like it, get out.
Yeah.
If you don't like this, get the hell out of here. So that was the true story, my friends.
Mari told me that you guys would play in Caricuaco. It's like the area in Caracas you play.
Caricual. Yeah.
And that it was known as Scaricual.
Yeah. Well, by the late 80s and the very beginning of the 90s, ska started to become popular. Not just the music, but also the aesthetics, the way that the guys and the girls dressed. For my eyes, it was beautiful. Because I love this two-tone way of living, dressing, talking, dancing. So when I started to the first time I saw a rude boy that I didn't know, I said, we're doing the things okay. Because it was like, okay, it's becoming, it's not just the friends, it's becoming something bigger. And the movement started to become big in the west side of Caracas, the capital city of my country, and especially in a ghetto, in a neighborhood called Caricuao.
Okay.
And of course those the rude boys from Caricuao said, we live in Caricuao. And of course that was very fun. That neighborhood, which is popular, is like working class area of the city, has always been a very musical sector of my city. In the 70s, very into salsa music. Then begun with a reggae, the first reggae bands from Caracas. They were created in Caricuao. And then, of course, it was time for ska. And yeah, a lot of bands, a lot of fans, festivals, ska scenes, as you know them. There are magazines made for ska, with low budget, and then even radio shows, like pirate radio shows. It was fun there, but back in the 90s in Caricuao, it was great. So that was called the root zone of Venezuela, even from Venezuela, not just from Caracas.
Was there other Venezuelan ska bands that were forming?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What are some of those bands?
Okay. In the late 80s, there appeared this band. They were called Etc. Mm-hmm. And they were playing ska, and their only album, I think it was released in 1989. It was independent release. It has also the black and white aesthetics in the cover.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we were like not only the first band, but the lucky band that had the chance to have a contract. And then other bands, they were that 100% independent. But even though we knew we were in the same ska movement, we were all the same. And so I can remember Etc. I can remember Palmeras Caníbales. How would you translate that, Marisol?
The cannibal palm trees.
Palm trees. Yeah. So Palmeras Caníbales, Sin Sospechas, and in some point, I think in the second half of the 90s. We had I don't know, maybe 25, 30, 35 bands in all the country. So we were one of the most ska countries in Latin America. Of course we were. And we decided to call the bands for listen songs for compilations. So we have Venezuelan Ska Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3, and we have also almost ready a Volume 4, but then pandemics came and, you know, plans were like distorted. But we have the chance to have a lot of music, a lot of ska music in this country, in all the areas, in north, south, east, west, everywhere.
Right back after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I was looking at the volume one of Venezuela Ska, and it says it was released on Pepe Lobo Records.
Yeah.
He's from Mexico City. He released all the early Mexico City bands.
Yes.
Tell me about how you connected to Pepe Lobo.
Sure. It was 1993, and we went for the first time to Mexico City, and we could not believe what we saw. What a city, what a culture. Wow, that city is overwhelming. So we went to a countercultural street market that takes place every Saturday. It's called El Tianguis de El Chopo. Tianguis del Chopo. So we went there because all the friends say, hey, you have to go there. You will find a lot of music. You will meet people in the underground media, whatever. So we went there, and believe it or not, there was a small store, a street store, and they were selling cassettes, and we were, you know, let's see what they have. And they had rehearsals from the Sorden in the 80s, rehearsals before we even recorded anything. And we said, how the hell get this? And they were like the real cultural promoters, you know, they were seeking for information, and they wanted to distribute that information to everyone in Mexico City. So in those days, in the 1993 and then in 1994, we met many people, and we also met Pepe Lobo. He was one of those early underground music promoters. He was especially in love with ska music. So we made a very close connection with him. nowadays I can say Pepelo is my friend. And some years later, we started to send him Venezuelan ska productions for him to re-release them in Mexico. And we gave him Venezuela Ska Volume 1, and I think Volume 2, too.
Yeah, so Pepe Lobo, for people listening, the bands in Mexico that are very big, like Panzeon Rococo and Inspector, Secta Core, he released all of their tapes before anybody else did. And before you could find these albums in stores, you could only go to the market that you were talking about and get those tapes. So he distributed and promoted ska in Mexico City before anyone else. He's a very, very important figure in the development of ska in Mexico.
Yes, he is.
So it's interesting that you connected to him. Yeah.
And he is 25 years later or so, he is still working on that. He's the like the same guy we met back in the 90s. He's that guy, very honest.
So just to go back a little bit, your first record comes out in 1988 on CBS.
Yes.
So you must have been popular if CBS wanted to sign you.
All right. Let me explain you why we had this record contract. In my country, let's say this. Venezuela is a country that produces oil. Okay, so there is money, and that's why we have so many corrupt politicians and whatever. But there is money, and when there is money, you can find investments in many things, even in culture, even in music. So there were this alternative band back in the second half of the 80s. Their name was Sentimiento Muerto, very important band in those days. Dead Feeling in English. Mm-hmm. They were more like a post-punk band. And they were so popular that the other record companies wanted to sign a competition for them. So they say, okay, what other bands are making good noise in the underground? And in the CBS, they had a scout. He was not Venezuelan. He was from Brazil. And he was very into alternative sounds. He went to a show of us. He saw the reaction of the crowd dancing and singing. And he liked what he saw. And he came into the dressing room after the show. And he said, all right, guys, I liked what I have just seen. I want to sign you. I went, wow. What? And who are you? And he said, well, I represent the CBS. And I want to see you guys Monday morning in my office. We went there, and he offered a very flexible contract. And actually, he was respecting the music, the lyrics, the two-tone aesthetics that we loved. And he said, I want that all like this. I don't want to change anything. And we said, well, that's perfect, like a dream for us. So we signed with the CBS just for one album. And good news were that we had very good sellings, very good sellings. Kind of a 50,000 official albums sold. That was a kind of gold or something like that. And the CBS were very happy with us. We were not maybe so happy, but it was okay to have something paying for the recordings. So we produced a second album. It was 1990, and we became more experimental. It was not that straight ska like the first album. It was more like jazz influences, like jazz harmonies and more complex arrangements. And we introduced African Venezuelan percussion, and the producer, the musical producer, was a jazz musician, which is very, you know, that's still like a genius, but absolutely out of this world, a crazy man. And he produced the album, and we were all crazy into the studio, and the followers of that very straight sound of the first album, maybe some of them were disappointed with this second production, and also the sales were not as good as the first album, maybe because what I'm explaining. So we went from 50,000 albums sold in the first album to maybe 15,000, which was not a bad number, but they were expecting more. So after that second album, we broke relations with the CBS. But in 1993, we had a brand new repertoire, brand new songs, all fresh, all danceable songs, singable songs. And we had a new meeting with a new executive from CBS. Now, in those days, it was not more CBS, it was Sony Music. And he listened to some of those new songs, and he said, okay, let's get married again. Let's do it again. So we recorded in 1994, Canto Popular de la Vida y Muerte. Marisabel, please help me.
It's like the popular song of life and death.
Okay. Uh-huh. Popular song of life and death. So that was very popular. That was our like real two gold selling album. And I still have one of those gold things in one of my walls in my apartment. I see that, and I, you know, it was a very good time for the band. And after that, we started to play not just in the main cities of my country. We started to play in medium-sized cities, small towns, even villages. We had the chance to travel to Mexico, Colombia, first shows in the US. In 1996, we crossed the Atlantic to play Europe for the first time. It was like wow, a great time for the band. And we were playing ska music, I have to say that. In those days, there was a huge movement in Latin America. It was called Rock Latino. I think you understand what I said. Right? So Rock Latino was a very, how do I say, variopinto, Marisabel?
Variopinto. ¿Qué te refieres con variopinto?
Variopinto, como variado.
Oh, a very varied, very diverse.
Yeah.
Yeah. It encompassed a lot of different styles.
Yeah, a lot of different styles. In Rock Latino, you could listen to rap music, ska music, punk, pop, whatever. It just was, the language was Spanish. That was just the only reason it was like all into the same package. But ska got big in Latin America in those days. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think there was kind of something in parallel with what was happening with the ska in the US in those years, which was getting bigger too, with more pop ska bands maybe. And well, the same happened in Latin America. Yeah, if you check those years, bands like Fabulosos Cadillacs from Argentina, or Paralamas do Suceso from Brazil, or even Maldita Vecindad from Mexico, or Desorden from Venezuela, we were good selling bands in terms of amounts of records in the market. And we were playing the region from north to south. That was a very good time, very good time. And then came the new century, and things changed a little bit.
So before the new century, though, on your fourth record, Plomo Revienta?
Revienta, claro.
That's a 1997. That's a Columbia record.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
There's several of your pretty big hits on that record, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Ayacayo?
Yeah, of course.
Valle de Balos?
Balas, yes.
Latex?
Uh-huh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask about Ayacayo. Can you talk a little bit about what this song's about?
Yeah, of course I can. How do I begin with this? I will start with the lyrics. This song, I will tell you the truth, my friends. I never believed that song could be a hit. And it's because of the lyrics. They are very straight lyrics that they talk about the violence in the streets of Latin America. And it's like three short chronicles for three crimes. The first of those is a crime when somebody is killed in the streets because a thief and a murderer wants to take his shoes off. So he kills the guy and he takes his shoes. And maybe you could say, what are you talking about? But those things happened in Latin America in those years because of the contradictions, the poverty, and whatever. The second chronicles in that song is about two gangs fighting for some street where they wanted to sell cocaine. So the bands were like, this street belongs to me. No, it belongs to me. So they started to kill each other with guns. And the third, it's very cruel. And the third chronicles, it's about, how can I say bala perdida, Marisabel? Lost bullet.
Yeah, lost bullet, like a stray bullet.
Oh, yeah, stray bullet, yeah.
So there's this crazy nonsense bullet that hits a kid, a 13-year-old, and she died. And those things happen in the big cities of Latin America. This stupid violence, well, violence is like in every stupid mind in the world. It's not just an exclusive phenomenon from Latin America. But this stupidity was the main reason why this song. And Ayacayo means there he felt. That's where he felt. Ayacayo. So that's the place where that guy or that girl was killed. Mm. Am I explaining myself?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So because of those lyrics, as I said before, I never believed that could be a hit. But the music, in the other hand, was and is very, very, very fun. It's like dancing music. It has this infectious rhythm that makes people dance, and it has this melodies with a brass section that is very catchy. And somehow the song began to came very popular. But when I say very popular, I mean it. It was like in the top 10 of the radio. How do you guys say this in English? Like the top 10 songs in the country.
Yeah, top 10.
In some point, and everybody knew the fucking song, and everybody was like dancing. Ayakayo, ayakayo. For me, it was. A very big surprise. I was not expecting that because of the lyrics.
So in Venezuela, was it unusual for a song on the radio to comment on violence and social issues?
It's not common at all. You can listen to that, but it will never reach the top 10 in the radio rankings. Never. So it happened with that song, and then happened what happens with popular songs. Other bands, like cover bands, play the song, and the DJs and the radio and the parties play the song, and it became like maybe the most important song in our history.
Baile del Vals, sorry if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. That song also is about commenting on the violence and stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, the concept of that album, Plomo Revienta, from 1997, the main concept is the art saying stop violence, the music saying we had enough. Let's stop the stupidity. Let's stop the guns. We had enough. And that's why you can listen in that album to songs like Ayacayo and Valle de Vales that translates Valley of Bullets, the Valley of Bullets. It's because Caracas, the city where I live, is a valley. So that's the reason we wrote that one. And
I see.
Yeah, that song became very popular too. And we have to play those tunes every show we play. There is no exit. If we, for some reason, we could say, oh, let's change the set list. Let's play another thing. People will not let us leave the stage without playing those. They could get violent if we don't play that. So we understood that, and we say, okay, let's play it. No, don't get mad. We will do that for you guys.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
I had read that when you released your first album, that the label put a warning on for broadcasters not to play two of the songs.
Yeah, that happened too. That's part of the story.
What are the two songs and what was the reason behind them?
Okay. One of those was Políticos Paralíticos, which was the first song I wrote when I was a 14 years old teenager. And the other one is called Donde Está El Futuro? Where is the future? And those songs, they both have political contents. And it was 1988. That was an election year in my country. So the CBS decided to put this warning on the arts of the album, because they did not want any trouble with the government. They say, okay, we recorded this, but we warn you not to air it, not to play it anywhere. It's just for private use. Like the people that buys this album, they want to listen to this in their homes, it's okay. If somebody plays it like in the radio or they broadcast in any possible manner, it's not our responsibility. that was the intelligent way to clean their hands, to wash their hands. And
I see.
And it's funny because when they banned these songs, it became a very strategic way to promote us, because many people were saying, what are these guys singing that we cannot listen?
Did these songs comment on specific politicians, or just the commenting on the general state of the country?
In the case of Políticos Paralíticos, it's just a very straightforward song against the political class, those bastards, corrupted, nasty people. And the song says exactly what I'm saying, that it's very straightforward. In the case of ¿Dónde está el futuro? Where is the future? It's maybe more kind of a black humor, nihilistic poetics. And it goes against the global crisis, corruption in the Vatican.
Oh, okay. The Catholic Church.
Yeah, Catholic Church. It's very. It's not an easy song. But it's very ska and it's very danceable. So it's fun because that maybe is one of the secrets of the long-term success of my band, because we make people dance and we make people think, and people likes that. People likes my experience. People likes to listen to songs that it's not just fun because of fun. It's because we're talking about realities that affects each and every one of us. But also it's fun and makes you dance. I don't know if I explained myself, but...
Yeah, you did.
Okay, great.
The Catholic Church has is popular or has a amount of control in Venezuela?
Not that much. Not that much. They have a moral majority with them. It's the main religion, not just in my country, but in all Latin America.
Yeah.
But it's well known that there are like corrupted priests that make not very nice things. So, that song in some way makes a statement against that.
I see.
Okay.
So, as you get into the 90s and the 2000s, you're playing big festivals in Venezuela?
Yes. Yeah.
Is it ska festivals or just festivals with different kinds of bands?
Yeah, like popular music festivals. And ska was and still is one of the most popular rhythms in my country. And in those years, there were like very big festivals. There is an airport inside my city. And in the late 90s, some festivals hired the whole airport for concerts. That was great. I can remember that was the biggest audience in front I have played in my life. And there were circa 150,000 people.
Wow.
And that was an unbelievable experience. I was so scared before getting on stage. my knees were like shaking. I was scared, real fear. And when I jumped the stage and this 150,000 people screamed together, I could not feel the stage under my feet. I was like flying. Not on drugs. That was the energy. That was huge. And those festivals were common in those days. Then came difficult situations in my country. I have to say that with a sad face, with a sad heart. But then many things happened and things changed in the 2000s. But back in the late 90s, the musical movement was very big, and you could listen like a ska band like us playing side by side with salsa bands, which of course is very popular in my country, and we have, I don't know, a rock band or a pop band. Ska was that big.
I was reading too that in the 90s that and you were kind of talking about this, that there was a lot of money because of oil,
yes,
and that the government was maybe funding or helped put on some of these festivals.
Not the festivals, no.
There
was money. So there was like promoters with companies that organized shows, concerts, whatever. So it was like private money.
Okay, it was private money. But there was a lot of money to go around and
yes,
money to be made. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, Mari also told me that you owned a club in the 2000s called
Caracas Club.
Club de Ska.
Caracas Ska Club. Yeah, that's true. It's because Ska was so big that we could make things like that. We hired an old discotheque that was not into its best moment. So we could rent it, we could hire it for low money, and we created this place for ska, and we had the chance to bring bands from the US to play here. We organized the first show for the Toasters. We organized the first show for Beam Scalabim from Boston. Also, we brought here the Scufflows and New York Ska Jazz Ensemble. And also my good friends! They have this beautiful new album, the Slackers.
Oh, nice.
They all came to my country because we organized that. It was not like thousands of people, but we could have a good night with, I don't know, 1,200, 1,500 ska fans dancing. And that's good. You know that's good. And
that's great.
And listening to ska, those were like 100% ska parties with international ska acts, national ska bands, and we were not not just the Sorden. We were the organizers, but we contacted other bands from Venezuela to play with the international ska bands and ska DJs, and everybody was dressed like Rude Boys. Beautiful, beautiful times.
Before you opened the club, was it difficult to get bands from out of the country to come play, ska bands?
Maybe not difficult, but nobody did it. we were like okay, we evangelized this music. We want to show to the fans other styles into the ska. For example, the New York Ska Jazz Ensemble, which in those days were very jazzy. Players, and I remember the first show with the Toasters. I remember Bucket. Maybe you guys know him. And I was amazed watching the ska scene in Caracas. He said to us, "I cannot believe what I'm seeing. I cannot believe the how many how much information these kids have about ska, not just the new bands, but they know about the two-tone, they know about the Jamaican old school, they dance to scat, to the scatlights. Hey, we brought the scatlights to our country two times in the 90s.
Oh, nice.
Nice. Those were beautiful days.
So before the interview, you were telling me that the first time that the Sword then played in the US was in 92.
Yes.
With the Scatolites?
Well, we went to New York because the Scatolites had a show. And we said, okay, can we do this? Can we afford the tickets and the low budget hotel? Let's do it. And the drummer of my band, the bass player of my band, and myself, we went to the Big Apple. So we went to this show in the SOBs. And we had all the fun. And after the show, we went into the dressing room of the Scatolites as fans. And there was the promoter of that show. I think he lived in New Jersey, this promoter. And he said, are you from the Sword and Público? He asked us, are you from the Sword and Público? Yes, we are. And he said, I have your first album. And we said, no way. Do you have it? Yes, I have it. I would like to interview you guys in my radio show in New Jersey. And maybe you guys want to play next week. We have a ska show here in New York City with a Scofflaws and maybe Mephiscopheles. And we said, okay, let's do it. We can play like two or three songs. Because we're just here, bass player, drummer, and guitar player, singer. So we can play something, but this is not the band. Like, we're a ska band, so we're like 100 guys. So we will try to do our best being just three guys. And we were promoted for that show in this cultural newspaper called the Village Voice, and. Mm-hmm. And there was this advertised for the show that said, special guest from Venezuela, CBS recording artist. The Sonar Curriculum. And we say, wow, recording artist, that's a joke. But we were there and we played. And Bufford O'Sullivan, the trombone player for Scofflaws, he played with us. He came on stage. And he had a beautiful solo with his trombone. And it was nice because the New York ska scene was growing too. And they were very, very kind, very, very nice people. And they, in some way, they embraced us. And for that reason, in 1993, the next year, we went for the first time with all the band to play in the East Coast, and we played. I remember three shows in Washington D.C., not the state. We played in New Jersey, in a not so big city, where what's the name of this singer? I'm born in the USA.
Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, Springsteen. He was born in somewhere in New Jersey, and we played there, and we played, of course, New York City. So that was the first experience of my band in the U.S. playing just into the ska scene, playing with Dancehall Crashers. We played with Hepcat. We played with Toasters. Wow, that was amazing because we were singing in our language, in Spanish, in front from American audiences, and they didn't understand many of the words we were singing, but there was this respect for the genre, this connection, and what was great, was beautiful.
So now, going into the 2000s, you released an album called the Ska Album on Megalith, right, in 2004?
This is some kind of a best of album.
Okay. And Megalith is Toaster's, that's Bucket's album after Moon.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
Is that the first time he released something for you? Or
yes.
Did he do something? Okay.
It was not possible because in the 90s, we were into this contract with the CBS, Columbia, Sony, whatever. And it was not possible at all to get licenses from the CBS to independent labels. Impossible. But
I see.
But after we broke with them in the early 2000s, it was like, you know, freedom. We could do whatever we want. And we went into this compilation with Bucket for Megalith Records. That album was also released in Europe with another label. I can't remember the name of the label, but it was like new times for us, and we were very happy with that. Because yes, you are into a big international label like CBS, and from the outside, many people say, hey, you guys must be like, you have to be millionaires if you are into CBS. And that's not truth at all. Mm-hmm. As I said before, when we saw the advertise in the Village Voice saying that we were CBS recording artists, like, wow. And we said to ourselves, oh, come on. It's not a nightmare, but not that far to be into a nightmare when you are into this big big companies and you are not Madonna, okay?
Yeah.
So when we got the independence, we had the chance to explore many other paths, many other ventures. For example, with Megalith and independent labels in Europe, independent labels in Japan, that was good for us.
And so you also start collaborating with some artists like Angelo Moore from Fishbone and Vic Ruggiero.
Yes.
From Slackers, Neville Staples from The Specials. Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra. I don't know if that was later or if that was in that time period.
Well, yeah, we have been very ska fans while we are ska musicians. I collect records. I love buy music in physical formats, and I love my CDs. I love my vinyls. I love to have them here in my apartment. And when I have chance to play with one of my heroes, it's great. I mean, I love the Slackers. I love their music. We have played with them in the US. We have played with them in Venezuela, and we have played with them in Brazil. So we know each other. We know the bands. We know their all their bands, and we love them. So when we had the chance to bring them to Venezuela, we asked Vic to record us. We invited him to a recording studio. We were into the sessions of one of our 2000s album. That record was called Estrellas del Caos. And yes, we have him, we have his voice into a multilingual song that is in English, Portuguese, and Spanish. And we also recorded a version of an old ska song, old Jamaican ska song, called I don't want to say the monkey one, do. That's monkey ska.
Okay.
So we have his voice into this thing. It was very fun. But we have also recorded with other great ska stars. we had the chance to record with one of the Specials. Wow, our heroes. Yeah. So we have Neville Staple in a song that I wrote in English, a song called Black Market Man. And well, here's the man singing that one. And we also have Angela Moore. We are in El Chacal, another good one, another good song. We have recorded with Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra in a song called Ska Mondo Ska. I think you guys understand that. So
yeah, that one's more recent though, right?
Yeah, more recent. It's like from 2016, so 6 years ago. And we have those guys, all the band recording with all our band. It was like, you guys are serious? Are you guys recording all your instruments in Japan and send it to us, all those tracks with all singing and playing and everything? That was unbelievable. First time we played in Japan, we were invited by the Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra. We had the chance to meet each other, the bands, in Amsterdam. We were playing in the same days in the same country. I think it was maybe 2010, 11. And after our shows, we met in a bar, and we were drinking beers and having fun. And one of the guys of the Japanese ska act said, we would be very honored to invite you to our country for a show. And we were, oh my God, this guy is drunk. He's saying whatever, you know? because, you know, Japan is like Japan. It's far, far, far east. And we say, oh, thank you very much. You are very kind. Of course, we would love to go to your country. Well, Japanese word. And like, I don't know, 2 months later, they were inviting us, sending the tickets and all the stuff to travel to Japan. So we played in a ska festival in Japan. That was like a dream. We were playing, you know, Mount Fuji, right? Which is
yeah,
very mm-hmm. important for Japanese culture. And we all have seen these mountains in our lives, in a photo or whatever. So this festival was in a lake in front of this mountain. And it was like a summer day, all green, beautiful day, warm, sunny afternoon, and there were only Japanese ska bands, but a Venezuelan band, us, and a ska band from Europe. They were, what was their name? A band from Holland, from Netherlands. What was their name? Very good band. And there was also Dennis Bovell band, you know, the bass player.
Oh yeah, from I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I think he's from
the reggae band from England.
Yeah, well, he was born in the Caribbean, in one of the islands.
Okay,
not Jamaica, but then he lives in England. So it was like an unbelievable festival with ska bands from different parts of the world in Japan. Oh my God. So after that experience, I wrote this song called Ska Mondo Ska, because I truly believe that ska is like a big family. And wherever I have traveled, traveled in my life, and I meet ska people, it's always the same smile, the same good vibes, the same hospitality, and it's everywhere. In Colombia, in the US, in Mexico, in Spain, in France, in England, in Japan, whatever. So I wrote this song inspired by this Japanese experience. And I said, since this was inspired by these guys in Japan, I would like to invite them to help us with Ska Mundo Ska with the chorus. And they said, are we allowed to record some other things? And I said, yeah, of course, whatever you want to record. What would you like to add? And they sent like trumpets, trombones, saxophones, guitars, keyboards, everything. Just because of the love of arts, because there were no money involved in this invitation. It was like, would you like to be with us? And they said, yeah, let's do it. Beautiful. And then I don't know if you had the chance to see the video.
Oh, I've seen it. Yeah, it's a great video. And I see members of Slackers, Hepcat, Inspector.
Yeah.
Who else is in there?
Well, there are musicians from Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Mexico, the U.S., Spain, Japan, England, Germany.
Yeah.
It was not a lie. It was true. Ska is a big family. It's a big worldwide family. And we could talk different languages. We maybe have different cultures and whatever. But we are a family.
The guy who's doing the dancing in the video?
He's the drummer of the Sorden.
Okay. Great dancer.
Yeah, yes. That's why he's the main character in the video.
Yeah. He's got good moves.
Yeah, he does.
We'll be right back after this.
I want to talk a little bit about, so I want to kind of move into the 2010s. Stuff happens with Venezuela, with the economy. Basically, I mean, you could probably explain better than me. The money that was there with the oil is not there anymore.
Well, this is not very easy for me to explain. I will try to make a complicate story very short. And, well, government has been doing a very bad job. Corruption and bad public measures. And the economy went to hell. And the national currency, was devaluado, Marisol.
The value?
Yeah, the value plummeted.
Okay, so everything went wrong. And then came the confrontation between the society, and some people supported the government, but many other people were against the government. So we were very close to a civil war, and I'm not exaggerating. And there was blood in the streets, and, well, terrible situation. And of course, the arts and the entertainment industry suffered a lot with this struggle between Venezuelan society. So the 2010s, all the last decade, was very difficult for us in this country, very difficult. And that explains, somehow that explains why there are so many Venezuelans living outside Venezuela. Maybe you guys have seen in the US Venezuelan communities that you did not see before the 2010s. And maybe you can see Venezuelan food restaurants and Venezuelan music festivals and whatever. It's because there are millions, 25% of the population of my country is outside the country. That's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
That's a lot. It means that every four of us, one is living somewhere abroad. So just to let you know, in Colombia, which is our neighbor, there are circa 2 million of Venezuelans.
Wow. And so a lot of the musicians left Venezuela, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In the US, there might be circa 1 million of Venezuelans. And in Spain, circa 1 million, and so on. So that was a very sad situation for the country. And many musicians decided to change their address. So many bands disbanded. And it was very sad for us to see how many, a lot of ska bands, like, you know, the singer decided to move to Spain, but the guitar player went to Chile, and the the drummer went with his family to Miami. And well, that was like ¿cómo se dice una puñalada? A stab,
yeah, a stab wound.
So the ska movement and all the music scene was stabbed by this situation.
Yeah,
and you stayed.
Yeah, I stayed here.
What caused you to stay?
Because I believe I have to do something here. I have to help somehow here. I'm not criticizing anyone. If some of my friends decided to move their address to some other country, it's okay. They are deciding the best what they believe for their lives, and I absolutely 100% respect that. But I decided to stay because, from my point of view, this country needs people here for the reconstruction. At some point, we have to rebuild this country. And one of the tools we have for this reconstruction are the arts, the music, the plastics, the theater, the movies. That's a very powerful tool, for helping bringing ideas to society. That's my belief. And since I think that's a very powerful truth, well, I will do that from here. And well, I'm here struggling, crying, fighting in the good ways for a better country.
That's excellent.
So the Sword in Público, you play a lot more shows outside of Venezuela now than inside because of these difficulties then, right?
Yes. In the 2010s, we played so much outside Venezuela than into Venezuela. And this is because of two reasons. First reason, as I explained, is because my country had this very difficult times, and there were no possibilities to produce shows, festivals, whatever. And the other reason is because there are so many Venezuelans outside Venezuela that they demand Venezuelan bands. So nowadays, it's very common for us to play in front of just Venezuelans in Spain or even in the US, because they organize themselves and they call us and they pay for us for our tickets and shows and whatever. And so we go there and we don't listen a word in English. For example, we played last December, we played in Denver. It was very cold, by the way. And we played in this club in downtown, and we got into the club. I never listened a word in English. Nor the bartender, nor the people in the at the door, you know, checking ¿cómo se dice bolsillos?
Your pockets. Checking your pockets.
Pockets. In your pocket, you know, no one was speaking English. So that's that's another reason that we are playing a lot outside of our boundaries of our country. And well, that's good because we are working and we're doing our job, and well, we are musicians. We want to play. Whenever people calls us and dance with our music, it will be okay. But I miss those years playing in front of national audiences. For example, playing in Washington, D.C., in front of Americans. Those were great days too, because that was another experience into this multicultural thing that happens in the world, you know. But it's okay. It's okay. I miss those days, but I appreciate that we still play a lot outside Venezuela. But let me tell you something. After the pandemics, things are started to change again in my country.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's our, I hope not to make a mistake, but I believe that this society is so saturated with conflict that we said, as society, we said, okay, no more. We had enough. It's time for new things. So much crisis, so much economical troubles, so much political interference in our lives. It's time for something new. And the pandemics made a turning page in the history, in the story. And nowadays, in this 2022, things are going better. And nowadays, we are starting to work a lot in our country. And I love this. I love this because it's a society that wants to find a new path. To find, we need, as Venezuelans, we need to find ourselves again as a society. We need to embrace ourselves. And you know what? Ska can help.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I want to ask about something you did recently. You played a show and then you filmed a documentary about it. I'm sorry, I'm blanking out on the name. Mari, what was it called?
It's Concierto en Petare, desde La Plata Banda.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Could you explain for people what the concert was?
Yeah, of course. Maybe you guys know what a favela is. It's this ghettos in the big cities of Latin America, where where there's poverty and where the houses are very poor and lives many people, and it's supposed to be the worst zones of the city where there's violence and criminals and whatever. So in Caracas, there are many barrios like those. And in the pandemics, it was December 2020. In December 2020, we had the chance to meet this cultural promoter from El Barrio, from Petare. Petare is one of the biggest barrios, not just in Venezuela, but in Latin America. In this barrio lives around 2 million people. So it's big, big, very big. So this guy says to us, I'm organizing cultural events in pandemics because in this area, there are many people living in small houses, and we need something because we're getting crazy while we are in locked down. So we are organizing movies for the community in the roof of one of the houses. We put a screen and we project movies, and we called like Clowns for the Kids, to make them laugh while they are the kids are into their houses. And we want to know what you guys think if we organize the Sorden concert in that roof. And we said, of course, let's do it. Not just because we were getting crazy too in the pandemics, but because that was like a challenge to get our music into one of the most dangerous ghettos of my city. We wanted to say, okay, let's see how real dangerous this is, because I never believed this is like, you know, only criminals living there. That's not true. That's only propaganda. So we went to that ghetto, to that barrio, and we were treated like heroes. That was beautiful, my friends. Those people were so grateful while we were bringing the band, the concert, the experience to have a ska band playing in a roof in this place. I have to ask you to see the photos or the videos. They are like in YouTube or whatever, because my words will not explain what the images can do, what can explain. Mm-hmm. It's this barrio, and you can see like all the barrio dancing, you know, young people, the kids, the elders, women, men, everybody dancing and singing in their houses while we were playing. And we played like three different sets in a long day. We played like a late morning show, then in the afternoon while the sunset, another show, and then by night, the third show. It was a very long day. And by night, people were in their homes, and one of the organizers said, since you cannot see the people because they are in their homes and it's night, you can ask them for this. If they are having a good time, if they are enjoying what you guys are playing, ask them to turn on and off the lights of their houses. It would be kind of an applause with the lights. Am I explaining?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I asked the people. So my dear, my fellow people from Petare, if you're having fun, let's turn on and off the lights of your houses to see, to get a connection with you guys, to know your reaction to what we are doing. And it was so beautiful. This big mountain full of houses with all those blinking lights. I have this memory in my mind, in my heart. It grows in me every day. Because I really believe that arts, that music is one of the tools for a better world. And it's not like an far away dream that someday the humanity will find. No, it's here. It's within us. We have it so close. It's within our creativity, in our heads. We just have to work for it to achieve it, but it's not impossible. We can build a better world with the music.
The community is something that's very important, especially when we live in societies with governments that are corrupt, governments and corporations that only care about themselves. Community, community is a way for us to care about each other, and communities need something to unite them, and music and arts is a major way that communities can feel connected to each other and feel like they have a purpose.
Absolutely, Aaron. I also believe that we have waited so long for prophets. We have waited so long for the this guy that will come and will bring solutions to our problems. And this is a lie. The solution is within us. It's in the communities. It's in the creativity. It's in the joint energies, would I say?
Yeah, joint forces.
Joint forces, yeah. Within us, within the people. We don't need governments. We don't need corporations. We can do it.
Yeah. So you know, in your career, since the 80s, you've been very critical of the government, and you've been critical of the government when it's been different parties, right? That it's, you know, you get different parties in power and it's still, you still deal with a lot of the same problems of corruption.
Yes, it is. I have written poetry for my songs that criticize this situation. Of course, a lot of my songs have this this plot to sing about, but there is also hope in the things I write. I also sing about what we are talking about. I also sing about we can do it. We, the people, we can do it. If you have a dream and your dream is fulfilled with justice, and you believe that your dream could help us to live in the most beautiful place in the world, come on, let's try it. Let's do it.
Yeah. So we'll probably wrap up, but I wanted to ask a little bit about the Sinfonico project you mentioned, which I think you did last year, right?
This year.
Okay. Very, very recent.
Yeah, it was the we played May the 28th in a beautiful theater in Caracas. Teatro Teresa Carreño is maybe the most beautiful theater in my country. So we played there. It was a sold out, more than 3,000 people inside this place. And how do I explain this? Since this was a symphonic disorder, Desorden Sinfónico, I had this idea to organize my songs like if they were part of a symphony. Yeah, like if it was a symphony. So it has three different movements: first movement, second movement, and third movement. So the first movement is inspired by the country that in some point of our recent history broke into many parts. So this is the first movement, and the songs into this first movement are maybe the most critical songs, the most confrontative songs of my repertoire. Then comes the second movement, which thinks about this country that was disbanded, that has to face itself in front of a very sad mirror, since 25% of Venezuelans are living outside Venezuela. So it's a difficult reality, and this second movement could be more sad, not that angry as the first, but maybe more nostalgic. And then comes the third movement of the symphony. And this third movement is fulfilled with the most happy and hope
Hopeful?
Hopeful songs, yeah. And in that third movement, I want my idea is to inspire the crowd to invent, to reinvent what we are as a country. So this narrative within the whole symphony makes this this piece of music like very important for me, because what we have been talking about in the last minutes is all into this this creation, this Desorden Symphonics or Sinfonía Desordenada or Desorden Symphony. And then you can listen to some kind of a symphonic ska music while we think about the country we were, the country we are nowadays, and the country we deserve to be in a near future.
That's awesome. How did everything go?
I'm so inspired by this. I said to you guys minutes ago that I stayed in my country because I think I have things to bring to the culture. And this concert was a very good achievement in this proposal, in this path of bringing ideas in my desire to inspire others to do good things.
Thank you so much for listening to In Defense of Ska. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe to the podcast wherever you normally stream or download episodes. If you haven't already, grab a copy of my book, In Defense of Ska, available at clashbooks.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. It's at In Defense of Ska. And please consider joining our Patreon at patreon.com/indefenseofska. You will get monthly bonus episodes, extended interviews and commentary per episode, and access to the In Defense of Ska Discord. In Defense of Ska would not be possible without the great team that tirelessly works on it every week. So you should go check out their other projects as well. Co-host Adam Davis has an amazing band called Omnigon. Give them a follow on Instagram and Twitter. It's simply @Omnigon. And our editor, Chris Reeves, has a phenomenal record label and podcast called Ska Punk International. For more information, go to skapunkinternational.com. And if you've ever enjoyed one of the highly specific In Defense of Ska memes floating around the interwebs, it was likely the work of The Bands I Like Only Charge $18. Find them on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And on that note, we leave you by saying, Ska now more than ever.